Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We'll speak a little more about circumcision and then move on to what I promised to discuss, which was carbon and nucleic acids, and how all of that provides insights into us being created in the image of God. When God turns to the conditions of his covenant, what he tells us is that he is going to, he's offering an agreement, and he presents this in his Torah in the first book, and Bereshith, which has been renamed to Genesis. And what he says is that I'm going to offer you an inheritance. Now, as to receive an inheritance, you know, almost always are related or family, and that's the case with the covenant. We're part of his covenant family. And he says, if you want to receive this inheritance, if you want to be part of the covenant family, then there are some conditions. And he lays out five conditions, which we find that Abraham accepted, and therefore Abraham received the benefits. And God says there's five benefits to the covenant. Now, God makes it absolutely clear that he is not bribing us. You know, if you're in it for the money, don't play. If you're in it for the power, don't play. God is saying, I'm going to tell you in very vague terms what I'm offering. But I'm not going to try to present, you know, like if you look at the Quran, paradise is presented as lounging around on comfy sofas and having perfect grapes and other kinds of food to eat and having slaves that feed you and then sex slaves that take care of all your carnal desires and the rivers that flow with wine. You know, it's presented as a really upscale brothel. God doesn't provide any of that kind of information. And all he uses is imagery to suggest that in eternity we're going to be transformed, and the transformation is going to be similar to going from matter to light, which we know to make that transformation, it's the speed of light times the speed of light in terms of empowerment. And, you know, he speaks of empowerment. He speaks of perfecting us because, you know, we are flawed and we disintegrate. As a material organism, we go from good to bad. It's the nature of things. I'm getting older and my flaws are becoming more of an issue. And that's just the order of things. And so he says, you know, I'm going to perfect you. I'm going to make you immortal. It's the transition to light. I'm going to adopt you into my family, and I'm going to enrich you, and I'm going to empower you. That's it. You know, we know that the conclusion of the seven mikre is asuka, which means to camp out with God. So, you know, the reasonable conclusion is that in the spiritual realm, we get to camp out with God in this way. That being the case, he's not bribing us. He's just saying there are some conditions. For his home and for this eternal existence to be enjoyable for him and for us, then what we can't replicate is what we have here on earth, where we're filled with lies and myths and all sorts of merciless treatment of one another. And so he says, you know, the impetus for all that merciless treatment and for the hell that man has perpetrated on fellow man on earth is religion and politics and militarism. So, I mean, none of that. If those things are important to you, if being patriotic and supporting your military, if being political, and if being religious, if those things are important to you, that's fine. That's your choice. You're just not coming into my home. It's the way it has to be. There's no other viable option, no other rational option. So God is unequivocal about that. He says he wants you to walk away from those things. The second God's telling us that if we want to be self-reliant or if we want to be reliant on these kinds of institutions, you can't come into his home. He wants us to be reliant on him. So he says, the second requirement is to trust and rely on him. Why would you want to go to heaven if you don't trust and aren't willing to rely on the promises and the ability, the capability of the individual you're going to spend your eternity with? Makes perfect sense. The third is to walk to me and become perfect, which is the means that God has provided for us to resolve our failings. You know, should I be wrong, for example, in the way that I observe the Torah, as opposed to obeying a rule? That is resolved by walking to God, whereby we avail ourselves of His 7 invitations to meet with Him and get to camp out with Him. Walk to me and become perfect. It's the second of these invitations to meet with God, matzah on yeasted bread, that provides this remedy. Then God said, I want you to observe the terms and conditions of the covenant. Pay attention to them. You know, focus on them. Understand the role that these things play in your lives. And you know, every single one of them is a benefit to us. And then lastly, he said, as parents, I want you to circumcise your sons so that you remember the covenant, because it's the sign of the covenant. It's your commitment to live within the covenant. It's like if I were to form an agreement between myself and another party to engage in a business, we would both sign the agreement. Well, circumcision is our sign. As parents, men and women, husbands and wives, mothers and fathers sign the agreement by circumcising their sons. That's the sign of the covenant. And God's saying, if you're not willing to sign the covenant in this way, then I am going to view you as having chosen to be excluded. That's your choice. And he's specific by telling us that if you don't circumcise your sons, and if you are a male and you are not circumcised, that he doesn't want you trying to participate in Passover, which makes you immortal. Because by not having agreed to the sign of the covenant, you'd become immortal, but eternally separated from him. He doesn't want you to make that mistake of becoming immortal, but estranged, which means you'd end up spending eternity in Sheol. So he says, don't participate in Passover if you're not circumcised, if you're a male. That's the reason. So it is it's an opportunity. Very few avail themselves of it. It sounds like a wonderful experience to me. I thoroughly love the experience of knowing Yahweh as He is now and having a relationship with Him in the here and now. It's hard to even fathom how much more wonderful it's going to be in the spiritual realm as we are transformed into light and get to see Him in a undiminished way. But it's God's universe. We were created in His image. He is allowing us to transcend our mortal lives here, our experience here, to take it from mortal to immortal. And he has these 5 conditions that we must embrace if we wish to go beyond this earthly life that he has given us. All right, those things said, I want to talk a little bit about carbon. We are a carbon-based life form. Scientists almost universally agree that there is no possibility for life to exist that isn't carbon-based, that all life will be carbon-based. For example, they're looking for was it possible that Mars could have provided a sanctuary for life? Could life have thrived on Mars? And they always tell you that, you know, water is the necessary thing. If there's liquid water, then life is possible. And so in Mars, it looks like there was liquid water. There's only a couple of problems. We can't find carbon, and we can't find nitrogen. And without carbon, without nitrogen, life's not possible. Carbon has before I tell you what the number of carbon is, let me tell you that the single most important formula to understanding who God is, what he's offering, if you want to know about his plan, if you want to understand the timing of his plan, if you want to know what he is trying to achieve, there is nothing more important than understanding why he created the universe in 6 24-hour days, and it was, that's about 14 billion years, from using our time clock looking back. 6 24-hour days is exactly equivalent to 14 billion years, depending on where the witness is relative to creation, whether you're actually at creation or you're looking back at creation through the lens of a camera here on Earth. They're an equivalent period of time, but 6 days to create the Earth, 7th day rested. there are six steps to Yahweh. The seventh, we end up in his presence. Everything associated with Yahweh is based upon 6 + 1 = 7. Everything. The Shabbat that God encourages us to observe. 6 days we work, doing anything we want to do. The seventh day, we rest and reflect on our relationship with him. Everything is based on 6 + 1 = 7. The six represents man. Man was conceived on the sixth day. Carbon has the atomic number of 6. God, who is one, tells us that his goal is to be unified with man, to be together with man. So 6 + 1, man plus God, equals Yahweh's idea of the ideal result of us being together, equaling 7. 6 + 1 = 7. Everything is based on that formula. The second most important element in our bodies is hydrogen. The atomic number of hydrogen is 1. The third is nitrogen. The atomic number of nitrogen is the answer, 7. 6, the carbon, the number of carbon, plus 1, the atomic number of hydrogen, equals the desired result, the number for nitrogen. Now, the fourth most prevalent element in our body is oxygen. Its atomic number is 8. When man is in a relationship with God under this plan of 6 + 1 = 7, we get the benefit of 8, which Yahweh specifically tells us represents eternity. That's why there are 8 days associated with Sukkah. The seventh day plus one more, the 8th day, to emphasize that we'll be camping out with God for all time. The acronym in science is CHNOPS, carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, and then there's 2 more elements that when added to the mix, so 6 elements that represent 99% of what we are comprised of. They are phosphorus and sodium. And you add to these 6, one more, the 7th, calcium, our bones, our backbone, that would enables us to stand upright. With God, you have 99%. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering the material of which we humans are comprised, and we have noted that carbon, which has the atomic number of 6, is the basis for life. We'll consider why here just in a moment. Plus the second most common molecule, element in our physical composition is hydrogen, which has the atomic number of 1. The third is nitrogen, which is 6 + 1, mirroring the formula that God uses to explain what he is trying to accomplish, that man plus God, who is one, equals his desired result of us being together, or 7. And it's in the proximity to oxygen that makes life possible. And oxygen is the fourth most prevalent element in our nature. And it has the atomic number of 8, which is the scriptural and scientific number representing infinity. Now, carbon is essential to life because it is able to form strong bonds. And it's because it forms relationships so readily, and it's designed in such a way that there is no other element that is capable of forming these kind of relational bonds, similar to carbon. Without carbon, for example, things like DNA become impossible. Proteins are impossible. Life is essentially impossible. In fact, that's why in astrobiology, it's always known that if life exists somewhere else in the universe, it will also be carbon-based. The two most important characteristics of carbon as a basis for the chemistry of life is that it has 4 valence bonds, and that the energy required to make or break a bond is just at the appropriate level for building molecules, which are not only stable, but also reactive, responsive, if you will. The fact that carbon atoms bond readily to other carbon atoms allows for the building of very long, complex molecules, which are necessary, for example, for DNA, for nucleic acids, for RNA, for proteins, for carbohydrates, for the things which nourish us, which of which we are composed. The most notable groups of carbon atoms are the in the processes, if you will, of living organisms include nucleic acids, which carry the generic information, DNA, RNA. Nucleic acids are generally very large molecules. In fact, DNA molecules are probably the largest individual molecules in the known universe. They are possible because of carbon. Biologically, nucleic acid molecules can range from 21 nucleotides, small interfering RNA, to large chromosomes, where a human chromosome is a single molecule that contains 247 million base pairs. 247 million base pairs to form a single molecule as part of the human chromosome carrying the DNA information, all tied, all laced together because of the bonding capabilities of carbon. Proteins, which are the building blocks from which the structures of living organism are constructive, are also carbon-based. Carbohydrates, which store energy in a form that can be used readily in cells, carbon-based. Lipids, which also store energy, but are in a more concentrated form, which provide energy for long, extended periods of time, are carbon-based. 97 to 98% of the human body is comprised of six elements: carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, phosphorus, and sulfur, with the seventh, calcium, elevating the total to over 99% by mass. Of the 118 elements on the periodic table, carbon is the best at bonding. Carbon loves to form bonds. What does Yahweh want to do? What's the purpose of the covenant? To find a bond with us. And carbon bonding is the best expression of free will among the elements, because while it will play favorites, it will bond with most every other element. It is not only the backbone of DNA. Without carbon, DNA strands could not be formed, which is the language of life. Moreover, carbon bonding is steadfast. Once bonds are formed, they tend to remain tethered, just as is the case with the covenant. We're going to speak about DNA and RNA and amino acids and the role they play as the result of what carbon bonding does for life when Shattering Myths continues after the commercial break. We'll be back in a moment. Now, having talked about the basis of life, the fact that carbon 6 plus hydrogen 1 equals the next most common element, nitrogen 7, and the fourth speaks of eternity of oxygen 8. The building blocks of life, the language of life, DNA and RNA, and then amino acids also give us some indication about the nature of our designer. You see, DNA, which is deoxyribonucleic acid, is a not only the fundamental building block for life, it contains each individual's entire genetic makeup. It is a component of every cell in the human body. And it is a language. And we're going to listen in a moment to the terms that scientists use to describe the fact that it is a language. RNA is structurally very similar to DNA, but this carbon-based molecule was created to produce proteins from DNA blueprints. It's called messenger RNA. Messengers, they convey a message, right? Is ribonucleic acid. and it carries the generic information for protein synthesis in the cells in a process that's called translation. To translate, that's what you do with languages. Amino acids then serve as the building blocks of all proteins and as intermediaries in metabolism. They're what fire our engines. They would make us go. Of these, there are 22. In God's language, in the language of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, how many letters do you suppose there are in that alphabet? If you guessed 22, that was the right answer. Now we have clarified the basic definitions of these three central ingredients. Let's review the big picture. DNA holds all genetic information. It is a source of information, just as is the Torah. It is transcribed to form RNA, which becomes the building block for protein synthesis. So now we have DNA being transcribed to form messenger RNA. Then it performs a translation to make amino acids. Transcribing is what you do when you take for example, a verbal communication, God called the universe into existence, and you transcribe it to make it written. For example, God's written presentation of his creation of the universe, which is the Torah. That's transcription. All of the prophetic statements in the Torah and prophets are transcribed. God said this, and those whose names are associated with those predictions transcribed them, wrote them down. Translation is what you do when you're translating from one language to another, or you're trying to have everyone who's involved understand what you're saying. You translate it. So, DNA is transcribed to form messenger RNA. Messenger RNA is then translated to form the 22 amino acids. Just happen to be 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. This is the blueprint, the language of life. Just as carbon 6 plus hydrogen 1 with nitrogen 7 combined with oxygen 8 to form the building blocks of all life. Now, there's also a bigger picture out there. I've shared this before. I can't prove this. It just seems so eminently logical that I'm fairly convinced this is the way the universe actually is. Cosmologically, there is time, which is the first dimension. In fact, one of the things that we know about the Big Bang, which is God's term, he used the term Big Bang. It wasn't a scientific term to oppose God. It's a term that God himself coined. That before the Big Bang, time did not exist. So the first dimension is time. Until light coalesces to form matter, there is no concept of time. Time simply exists prior to that point. There is no measurement of it. It does not flow. So the first dimension is time. It was the one conceived on the first day. It's the one that is moderated by the concept of light. It's the one that makes the other three standard dimensions that we are most familiar with possible. But to these four dimensions, to explain the universe as we know it, we must add three more for a total of seven. They include accounting for dark matter, which is physical coalesced energy into matter that has an attractive nature. It is, therefore, in its attraction, it would be equivalent to relationships. Then there is dark energy. Collectively, by the way, dark energy and dark matter represent 94% of the universe as we know it. Dark energy is repulsive in its nature, which means that it would be the underpinning of the concept of free will or choice. And then the communication medium that facilitates the translation between energy and matter, I think, is the seventh. You see, all matter is organized energy. And there's a communication medium that coalesces energy into matter. It's words. We are invitations. The very thing that God talked about in talking the universe into existence. He spoke it into existence. So whether it's on the internal scale of the elements that upon which we are comprised, whether it's the language and the alphabet which was authored to make life possible, or whether it's the universe itself based upon what we know of it and the four dimensions plus these three things that we know exist, and we know that they're profound, and we know that they represent the majority of what's there, but have been unable to define. All points to the same individual, the same plan, the same timeline. In our previous sessions, we were considering Yahweh's last statement to Abraham. It's not his last in the sense that he had many other things to say to Abraham, but the last chronologically in our review of this material. And it was, after Abraham came to know precisely what God was offering through this inheritance, by God taking him to his home, by God equating the inheritance to light, with the light of the stars. And Abraham coming back to say, I totally trust and rely exclusively on you, Yahweh. And Yahweh was saying, on that basis alone, he was going to consider Abraham vindicated, upright, perfect. And then Abraham said, I'd like just some reassurance here. Can you tell me the process that you're going to use to affirm that I receive this marvelous inheritance? And Yahweh demonstrated the mikre, these invitations to meet with him, these festival feasts that we celebrate seven times a year. And then he equated this festival, this feast that he was throwing on behalf of himself and Abraham, with the Exodus, with the process that he used to free his children from the crucible of human, religious, political, military, and economic oppression in Egypt, which is the basis of the first four mikra. It's the basis of the first four of seven, not all seven, because it's the first four that enable the benefits of the covenant. Pesach, which began the Exodus, is about becoming immortal, having your life spared. Matzah, which was the first day of the Exodus, is about being perfected, removing yeast from our nature. Yeast is a fungus, represents sin. The third day, we become God's children. We're adopted into his eternal family, and therefore represent the covenant. We are the covenant. And the fourth occurred seven sevens later. It's the celebration of the promise of the Shabbat, when Yahweh gave to Moshe this very Torah that we are reading and considering. Collectively, Shavuah added to the first three, where we are perfected, we are become immortal, we are adopted. At Shavuah, we are enriched with Yah's teaching, we are empowered by his spirit. They are the five benefits of the covenant. So on this day, Yahweh karat, the familial covenant relationship, the Bereth, with Abraham. Here it's still Abram. He will become Abraham later. Abram means father who uplifts. To promise to your offspring, I give therewith this land, this realm. Now, he is just taking him to heaven, had he not? And so, if you're thinking about this realm being strictly the land of Yisrael, well, that's a reasonable conclusion. Where was the place that God had just taken Abram? That's why reading something in context is so important. He just took him to his home, didn't he? Took him to heaven where spiritual life in the likeness of light existed. That's the realm that he's offering us. Now, temporarily, we are going to celebrate life in the land of Yisrael. That's where Yahweh is going to return. He's coming back to Yisrael. He's going to exist in Yisrael. And Yisrael is going to be like the Garden of Eden here on earth for 1,000 years. But the fact of the matter is, the realm that he took him to was to heaven. And that's what he's offering. Now, in this discussion, karat was the term used to convey cut. Karat means that the covenant was cut. Now, that can be translated established in the sense that we cut a deal in business. We're establishing a business relationship. But cut was chosen because the covenant is specifically designed to include those who embrace its conditions and who come to know Yahweh and who want to continue to live with them, who are willing to trust and rely on what he has said, who value not only the seven invitations that he has provided for us to meet with him and come into his presence, but also who highly value his Torah guidance. We are cut into this relationship, which means we are cut away from human institutions, is what God is saying. You know, we are set apart from the world to be set apart unto him. Cutting, a division is important. That's why Yahusha said, I did not come to bring peace, but to division. He spoke of a sword in the sense of cutting, dividing. What side of the divide are you on? That's what cover means. Welcome back to the final segment of Shattering Myths for today. The means that Yahweh provides for us to inherit this realm, which is the realm that Abraham was given the opportunity to view, God's home in heaven, follows six steps which lead to the seventh as the result. It follows the exact same plan that that carbon plus hydrogen equate to, with nitrogen being the third most prevalent element of our makeup. 6 + 1 = 7, so that we might, 8, oxygen, exist forever. Along these lines, the first step is the doorway. It's the doorway to God's home. It's the doorway through which Yahweh took Abraham. Abraham actually did a dress rehearsal for Pesach when he took his son Yishak there as the sacrifice to open that doorway. And then God said, don't sacrifice your son. Your son is going to live because I'm going to personally make the sacrifice. And God himself, through Yahusha, became the sacrificial lamb of Passover. He was remedying the consequence of our sin, our separation, our rebellion, which is death. It's not the penalty, just the consequence. And that's the purpose of the sacrificial lamb. And so Pesach opens the doorway from mortality to immortality. To be with God is to be like light. You become immortal. It is the threshold that opens that door. Then the threshold that one must cross to go from our imperfect world to the perfect world, think of it as a welcome mat. You know, what do you do on a welcome mat? You wipe your feet off. You get the dirt and the gunk off of your shoes before you walk inside so you don't track it in the house. Matzah is exactly that concept. Matzah is where our souls are scrubbed of the fungus of sin. Yeast is a fungus. And the fungus of sin is removed for us when we observe matzah. The third step along the way is Bokurim, the word is from Bakar, which means firstborn child. The YM ending means plural, so it's firstborn children. It's children adopted into the first family, the covenant family. Then, for the covenant's children, we recognize that the promise of seven, of the Shabbat, of 6 + 1 = 7, which is the whole presentation of Shabbat, that the promise of seven, Shabbat and Shabbat, both mean promise, and they speak of the number seven. That the promise of seven, of the Shabbat, is that we are enriched with God's teaching, which is what the Torah means, his teaching, and we are empowered by his Spirit, becoming like light. Those are the first four steps that have been fulfilled by Yahweh, because they are the benefits of the covenant. But there are three more. These three have not yet been fulfilled. The first of them is Teruah, which is often called trumpets. It's where the beneficiaries of the first four mikre, or invitations to meet with God, are encouraged to herald an announcement, to convey the message, to tell all who are interested in listening that there is a path to God, there's a plan, there's a formula, and that that formula, that plan, has us walking away from religion and politics and to God along this specific path, which begins with the doorway called Passover. So on the fifth of the seven, we're just called to be heralds, to share this message that we're sharing today. The fulfillment of Teruah is going to occur in the next 13 to 14 years, where Yahweh's covenant children will be removed from this planet prior to us going through a horrible period known as the tribulation. That is the timing that is going to occur. Next, we move on to Yom Kippur, the Day of Reconciliations. The Day of Reconciliations, Yom Kippur, is the day that Yahweh is going to return. And on that day, the purpose of that day is to reconcile his relationship with his chosen people, with Yisrael. He's also going to bring together Yisrael and Yehudah. You see, Yisrael represents the tribes other than Yehudah. Yehudah was which means related to Yah, broke away from the others. Actually, the others broke away from Yehudah over a dispute as to who would be king. And in that dispute, Yisrael was destroyed by the Assyrians in the 7th to 8th century BCE. And then in the 6th century BCE, Yehudah, separate from Yisrael, was destroyed by the Babylonians. Well, God is saying that they may have been destroyed as a nation, but I'm going to bring them all back together. I'm going to reconcile them together and reconcile their relationship with me so that we, on the seventh day, can all camp out together, which is what Sukkah represents.